Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Mother's Day edition celebrating some of the 350,000 women in uniform during World War II. Most of the women we've heard from over the years on this show would become mothers only after meeting their future husbands in the course of their military service in World War II. We'll hear more of those match made in uniform stories, but I also want you to hear from nurses, from Pearl Harbor to D-Day to the Bulge to those intense battles of the Pacific. The thousands wounded in all of those engagements received care and comfort from nurses. And we have heard some striking memories from those nurses here over the years, like a young lady from Oklahoma who found herself at Mare Island Naval Hospital in California.
Our quarters at Mare Island was beautiful. We had lovely quarters. And so they got the house mother and got me a bed, and I fell into bed. And the next day, I met the gal who was head of surgery. And she says, I said, yes, I'm just coming into the Navy. And I've had lots of experience. Lied like a dog in surgery. And immediately, I was sent to the operating rooms.
Right then. And how much experience did you have in surgery?
Other than what I'd had in nurse's training.
Not much.
No. But you see, the corpsman did the work, and we supervised. I had dirty surgery, and then I had 3 skin graft wounds. Now, Mare Island was filled with Pearl Harbor burns, and we did lots of skin grafting. But then they didn't have regular surgeons that were good. They would have doctors that were specialized in skin grafting from San Francisco come out to Mare Island and do the skin grafting.
So I'm just imagining what it must have been like to be you. You're 21 years old. You're halfway across the country from everything you've ever known or been around. You're going to be involved in these kind of surgeries that you've never seen or witnessed or been involved with before. And then there's all these guys, and you know what's happened to them. They were at Pearl Harbor. They were not killed, but pretty close to it.
That's right. And these boys, when they'd come into dirty surgery, see, they opened up the Japanese camps. And they sent their boys, and the Japanese mistreated our boys. It took me years to like the Japanese after I got out of the service.
And anyway, this is going to be later on in your time when you get these returning prisoners of war. But at this time, with those Pearl Harbor survivors that you guys are treating, can you give us an example of what kind of injuries,
There was all kinds. There was bones. Now, they did a lot. You know what a revision for a stump? They'd take and they'd cut back the shrub to here and put a flap over it so they could put the prosthesis. Well, they had big prosthesis, and they made the prosthesis right there at Mare Island.
So manufacturing prosthetics for sailors who had lost limbs, legs. had just one leg.
Or an arm or so forth. Mm-hmm. And they'd have to do the revision for the arm or the leg or so forth. So that was one surgery.
Did you interact at all with the patients?
I met this wonderful husband of mine. Where's the picture? Okay. My dear, charming husband had 4 left feet. He wasn't a good dancer. See, he had been on an LSD, and the crane broke and knocked him 20 feet down the hatch and broke every bone in his left foot. So he was at Mare Island getting his left foot cleaned up.
And he wasn't, you're calling him your husband now, my dear husband, but he was a stranger at this point. You didn't know who he was.
Well, I met him, but he was at SOQ and with all the gang. Uh-huh. Anyone in the service you agreed with, by that you accepted them. So then we started dating. He was very brilliant. I was very intrigued with his knowledge.
Looks like a pretty good-looking sailor there, too.
He was very good-looking. Well, come on, so was I good-looking.
And if you want proof, we'll put these pictures up at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. So I'm sorry to interrupt there. So you meet this young man, but he would never dance with you because of
Well, he didn't
the foot
dance.
Injury?
He didn't dance well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was too busy dancing with everybody else.
I guess so.
Then we had a Halloween costume. And I went as a Tahitian girl. And I was in a Tahitian sarong. And I won first prize. I won a case of champagne. But I didn't get one bottle of the champagne. Everybody else drank it.
Uh-huh.
So anyway.
So this is obviously an important job. And for these guys who are being treated there at the hospital at Mare Island, it's life and death. But it sounds like you're having yourself a lot of fun.
Well, the thing of it was, everybody knew me because I was in surgery. I was a nurse from, because see, all of them would come to surgery for some type or other and so forth. And they'd meet me, and my mother couldn't take this when she came to mine. They'd meet you, and they'd take their stump, and they'd shake it in your face and say, "Hi, Miss Garrett, how are you today?" And
you just got used to that.
Well, you just, you know.
Was it ever hard to see that, to see that these are guys that
No, you just got used to it. Well, to a lay person, it would be hard.
Mm-hmm.
My mother just couldn't take it.
Did you ever think about the burden that these guys were going to carry or it reflected?
How they were going to be accepted when they left the Navy, mm-hmm. because they were in their element. They were with other people with maybe both legs gone or an arm or both arms and so forth. I've often wondered how they made it. Because it was naturally hard on them.
Well, sure. And this, I mean, here's this war. I mean, 16 million Americans would end up serving. More than 400,000 died.
Yeah.
That's a heavy price. But the guys you worked with paid a really heavy price, too.
Oh, yes. And see, so many of mine were Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
They were the burns. And, the burns were bad.
And one of the patients there at Mare Island, whose burns were extremely bad, was Donald Stratton. He had been engulfed in flames on the USS Arizona, but survived after being thrown a rope from the USS Vestal close by. Don's going to be headed to Washington, D.C. soon to try to secure the Medal of Honor for the sailor who saved his life on December 7, 1941. But the care from nurses like Peggy at Mare Island also helped preserve his life and his limbs.
Went through a lot of skin grafts and a lot of stuff, a lot of baths and a lot of skin grafts, a lot of time laying. They put us on a bunk and put a canopy over the top of us and covered the canopy with a blanket and put light bulbs in the canopy to keep us warm and kept the burns open to the healing air.
And not only would he heal up over the course of a year, but he would re-enlist in the Navy and serve the rest of the war on a destroyer, a testament to his patriotism and devotion to duty, but also to the devoted work of those nurses like Peggy at Mare Island Naval Hospital. The war in Europe overwhelmed medical personnel there, too. Filda Brodalski passed away last year at the age of 96, but when she appeared on this program with her husband and fellow veteran, Ted, she explained what it was like to arrive at Normandy's Utah Beach 10 days after D-Day in 1944.
There were only 5 hospitals on the beach at that time. And we only had a 5-mile region they had captured. And one was going towards France. The other was going up the peninsula to Cherbourg. And we set up our hospital in a field. And 3 hours after we opened up, we had to shut down because we had 300 patients. I had them. I was pre-op nurse. I had them all over the field. I had them in 300. Army tents, hospital tents. We were just overloaded.
Now, I'm sure when you went over on the ship, you had an idea of what it was going to be like, and you probably felt like you were somewhat prepared for this, right?
Well, not really. You think you are, but boy, it's a lot different from what you think.
What was the hardest thing, the thing that really struck you the most and maybe overwhelmed you the most? Was it just the sheer numbers of casualties? Was it what they looked like? Can you give us a sense of what that experience was like emotionally for you?
It was hard. In pre-op, we had mostly the patients with the broken legs and the minor surgery. Major Emery had the shock tent, which is the beginning of the special unit that you have today. And We had a few of his patients that we kept if we had time, but mostly it was the minor surgery, if you can call it minor. And we used to prepare them for the surgery and get them through as fast as we could.
You talked about thinking that you were prepared, but quickly realizing that you couldn't possibly be prepared for this.
In our day, nurses didn't give intravenouses. They didn't do a lot of the things that nurses do today, but I learned very quickly how to do it on the beach.
Exactly. And I'm sure you also learned very quickly that there were some soldiers that you just couldn't do much for. How hard was that for you to come to grips with that fact?
It was rough. I can remember in Aachen, Germany, where we were stationed in a barracks and had made a hospital out of it. And it was Christmas time when the Hertzkin Forest began to bulge. And I came on duty that night, and the fellas, the Red Cross people had decorated all the rooms, and the fellas were singing and feeling pretty good because it was Christmas. And right smack in the middle of the ward was this poor 18-year-old dead. No one around him realized it. So I got him out, had my corpsman take him out right away. But it just hit at Christmas time. That was pretty bad.
I can tell it still bothers you today, and I think everyone understands why. I've got to ask you, did you go into it thinking this was a dangerous job, or were you fooled into thinking that since you were wearing a Red Cross?
I just knew how I was going to go in. If Lena could do it, then I could do it.
When did you realize that it didn't matter if you had a Red Cross on, or you were wearing a nurse's uniform, or you were officially a non-combatant, that you could be in danger yourself?
Oh, yes. We were in a rest period in France in between changes. And one morning about 6 o'clock, this airplane comes over and drops a bomb just over the hedgerow from where the nurses were. So we could have died if it hadn't been a dud. And then another time was when they were strafing the road, and they would come right up to the area where we had our Red Cross, and then they would stop on the other side. Fortunately, they did that. They lived by the Red Cross rules. But if they hadn't, you could have said goodbye.
We wouldn't be having this conversation right now, that's for sure. What would you say was the hardest thing for you to overcome in your whole experience as a nurse in World War II? The biggest challenge, or I'm sure you had some days where you thought, you know what, this is hard. I don't know if I want to wake up and do this tomorrow.
You got very tired. We didn't have days off. You worked 12 hours to 18 hours a day. And some days it was just packed with ambulances bringing in the wounded, that you wondered what in the world you were ever going to do, because you thought you'd never get through handling the injured. The thing that bothered me the most was the food. It was horrible.
You mean you didn't have homemade ravioli and spaghetti like growing up in an Italian family in Massachusetts?
K-rations were pretty good, but then we start getting other kind of food. And I swear the stew was made out of horse meat. And I just couldn't eat it. That's why when we came to the end of the war, my heart had kicked up again. And I was down to 98 pounds.
Now, you mentioned your heart, and I don't think we touched on this earlier in the conversation. And I've met a lot of veterans over the years who maybe they lied about their age. And you had to tell a little white lie yourself to get a uniform on. Tell me about that.
I was doing private duty nursing, waiting to go in the service to take my exam, my health exam. And I happened to know this doctor on a maternity ward who was at Westover Field. He was a captain. And he did my physical, and he took 5 pounds off, added 5 pounds, and told him that it was a murmur that was generic. It wasn't anything else.
So you knew you had a heart condition that would disqualify you? Yeah,
Dr. Henderson had told me when I was in training, but I didn't tell them.
You must have been sweating it out a little bit to see if you would get found out.
I was worried that I wouldn't get through the physical, but with the help of my friend, I got into it.
So we took a little detour to fill in that story there. You were saying that after you'd been in for a while and been through some of these battles and treated so many soldiers, as you got tired, you were losing weight, your heart was bothering you again. How did you get through those situations?
You just enjoyed doing your work, feeling that you were doing some good, that you were doing a place in the service that no one else could do. And that's what made you feel pretty good. And there were times when you were pleased because you could really help a person. Like that time in the Hirschkin Forest, I got a patient in there who was bleeding from a wound in his arm. And I knew he was dying because the blood was just pouring out. And so I gave him plasma and blood and shipped him into the operating room as soon as I could so that they could tie it off and, you know, do something.
And those are, I mean, truly life or death situations. If you make the wrong decision, it could cost someone his life.
That's right. And, you know, you had a doctor in charge of the war, but he was so busy that you had to do a lot of the things that he did.
Filda's hospital, the 96th Evacuation Hospital, treated nearly 25,000 wounded soldiers in Europe. And her experience there certainly prepared her for life after the war, when she became mom to two daughters, holding down the fort while Ted, who had been in the Marines in World War II, spent 22 more years in the Air Force. It's time for another break, but we'll hear from more mothers who can also proudly wear that label of World War II veteran when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say, I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 800 veterans have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.